Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The new documentary, Farmers for America, is going to be shown in towns and cities across the state over the next couple of weeks. It introduces viewers to the farmers who are shaping our land today and the farmers who will be shaping the future. And the premise of the film is that we are at a pivotal moment in agriculture in America right now. Here's a clip from the film.
As generations have voluntarily left or been sized out of rural America, the cities and suburbs have filled up. This has placed the responsibility of feeding more and more Americans on fewer and fewer people. Aware of this, the former United States Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, made a pressing call for 100,000 new farmers. The statement was met with applause from Republicans and Democrats. But where will this next generation of farmers come from?
That's a big question and is thoroughly explored in the film Farmers for America. The filmmaker behind this documentary is with me now, Graham Merriweather. Hello, Graham.
Hi, Charity. How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk.
So tell me how you got interested in making this film. What brought this moment in time in American agriculture into your mind?
Well, I directed a documentary called American Meat, which is all about chicken, cattle, and hog production in America. And as we were going around the country and doing screenings of that film, we were going to FFA chapters and universities and independent movie houses and community centers, and we'd have food together beforehand and panel discussions afterwards. I just kept hearing the same thing from everyone that I talked to, which is that the average age of the U.S. farmer is 60 years old. Half of our farmland is going to change hands in the next 12 years. Basically, we have an incredible moment, an incredible opportunity for change with our nation's agriculture that's unprecedented in our nation's history. And so I said, we're going to make a film about this issue.
I'm going to throw out a couple more statistics that make their appearance in the film. 6% of farmers right now are under the age of 35. So really a very small percentage of farmers are what we would call young farmers. But there's another statistic that really focuses the idea that we are right now at a moment following three or four decades of tremendous change in agriculture. In 1980, there were 6 million farmers in the United States. Today, there are 3 million. Why do you think this moment is so pivotal? Because we certainly have momentum in the direction we've been going in.
I think it's the huge transfer of land. It's really a generational issue. So you have the baby boomers are essentially winding down their productive careers in agriculture, and there's a huge gap. There's a lot of people in the 1980s farm crisis decided they weren't going to farm, were pushed away from the farm, and so there's this big gap of where they're just people that didn't come back. And so right now, because of that gap, because of the 80s farm crisis, and because of the baby boomers aging out, we have this very unique opportunity, and it's, I use that word in a positive and a negative sense. Like, this is a moment. It could be a crisis. It could be an opportunity. And we're going to define who we are as a nation with our agriculture in the next 10 to 15 years.
When we talk about agriculture, there are two very different kinds of agriculture going on right now. For example, in the state of Iowa, where we have conventional agriculture with the larger livestock operations, the larger row crop farms, 1,000 or more acres, many of them. And we also have this different kind of farming, a sustainable approach with smaller farms growing horticultural crops or vegetable crops on much smaller acreages with often a focus on organic production. These are the farms where you see the young farmers. But you didn't want to create a documentary where you just focused on one kind of farming or the other kind of farming. Why not? Why is that?
Well, because it's funny. As I've spent the last 11 years going around the country and filming farmers and staying on their couches and in their basements in the extra bedroom and, you know, sharing dinners at their dinner tables. And I just find that, you know, I've stayed at farm with farmers that have huge commodity operations and, you know, small garden plots in Detroit. And what I've realized is that it's often, I feel like it's a false binary that we've set up in this conversation. I think the reality is, for instance, when I was filming with Johnny Glosson, who's a chicken farmer for Pilgrim's Pride in Siler City, North Carolina, you know, he raises some huge fat hogs out in the back barn that he sells locally. So he's doing the big industrial chicken thing, but he's also doing the local pork thing. And his son was the Farm Bureau Farmer of the Year and selling at the local farmers market. So I think when we set up that binary, we set ourselves up to not really benefit from each other's differences. What I see right now is, and part of this is why I feel like hopefully this is a film that shows an incredible promise for American agriculture. And I guess what I would say the thesis of the film is basically that we have this moment now where in rural America, as I was listening to your program, right before I started talking to you, I heard about a consolidation. And these consolidations are happening all throughout Iowa. They're happening all throughout our agricultural regions. And the reason is because we've had this incredible leap in technology. So one farmer, as you were mentioning, can farm thousands and thousands of acres. And so what it's doing is, yes, there's a lot of efficiency there, and there's a lot of experience and a lot of tradition, but those farms just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so there's no room for young people to get started in rural America. And so concurrently, as you have this sort of winnowing down of populations in rural areas, you have this local food movement that's sprouting up, which is vivacious and young and has a lot of first-generation farmers who have a lot of idealism and they have a lot of know-how and they have strong backs, but they don't have much experience. And so it's not clear that they can actually make a living at this. And so what I see is the potential for some incredible synergy. You have the people in rural America that desperately need young people to stick around, and you have this local food movement that desperately needs people with experience. So I guess the dream of this film and my dream for America's next agriculture is finding a way to bring those two worlds together so that we can have the efficiency and the experience of commodity agriculture combined with the idealism, the backbone, and the youth of the local food movement.
At the same time, we have a public that interacts with farms less than we have historically, because there was a time, especially in Iowa, where most of us were related to somebody who worked on a farm. Now, with the local foods movement, we're interacting with farmers at farmers markets and through community-supported agriculture, but still our distance, our separation from agriculture is a larger gulf than it's ever been before. Are you hoping that this film will also help people who don't know anything about agriculture at least learn a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like it's something that is a big issue in my own personal life. And I feel like in a lot of our lives, we feel disconnected from everything that we're exposed to. If we, you know, our clothes are made in India, or all of our objects are made in China, our food is starting to be imported more and more, or it's grown in a region. If you live in a city, it's grown in a place you've never visited. And so I think a lot of people feel really disconnected from what they eat, what they drink, what they wear, where they live. And so I think one of the reasons that farmers markets have been sprouting up for the last 5 to 10 years and that people have really started to embrace the local food movement is because it feels so healthy, and it is so healthy to connect with something that's a part of who you are. So, you know, this morning I had carrots that my friend Ian grew, and, you know, I know him. He's a friend. that, like, that story was part of my meal. And so I think people really respond to that. And so, yes, absolutely. I would love for this film, if we are able to do more and more screenings in urban areas, you know, to just say, hey, you know, if you're eating today, it might be cool to go out to a farmer's market and buy some food and actually connect to something in your life, connect to something that nourishes you.
When you were interacting with farmers all over the United States for this film, did you feel a gulf between the more traditional or conventional kind of agriculture and the new kind of agriculture? We have this idea that there's a large gulf. Is that something that you experienced in reality?
I did not experience that. What I normally experience is that, like I was saying with Johnny Glosson in Silo City, North Carolina, these farmers are not usually angry at other farmers. Generally speaking, in fact, I can't even think of any situation in which a farmer has been said something negative about another farmer in a serious context. And so I feel like, you know, the person I mentioned, Eden, who grew the carrots that I ate this morning, you know, he grows GMO corn, and he thinks that's fine because after he spent a few summers walking corn with organic and having to spray fish emulsion all the time, he was like, this is crazy. You know, so he's an organic farm that decided to grow GMO corn. And so you see a lot of stories like that where a farmer made a decision that they're going to do one thing in a more conventional way. They're going to do another thing in a more organic way. And I certainly don't see them bad mouthing the other. I think where you do see that happening a lot is on social media, where it's very easy to sort of have a very strong willed, angry post that gets a lot of attention. And then there's also the even though you have your name down there, like there's it's not the same of looking someone in the eye and talking to them. And so I think that leads to a discourse that is often sort of feeding that binary that we have in our head, that's actually super unhelpful, because it's going to drive these two worlds, and it's going to create these two worlds, and in doing so, you know, miss out on this incredible opportunity for synergy that I mentioned, where you have two worlds that desperately need each other, that can build America's next local, regional, healing agriculture.
I'm talking with Graham Merriweather. He's the filmmaker behind the new documentary, Farmers for America. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. The film is going to be shown in a number of different places in Iowa over the next couple of weeks, in Pleasant Hill, Iowa City, Fairfield, Ames, Des Moines, and also in Cedar Falls. You can find more information on the website leaveitbetter.com. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the new documentary, Farmers for America. It takes a look at the farmers who are shaping our land right now and farmers who will be shaping the future. This is a moment in time when a lot of land is going to be changing hands, and I want to play another moment from the film. This is Joel Salatin, and he sees this moment as one that could fundamentally change agriculture.
We're entering a time of unprecedented disturbance, upheaval. The average American farmer is now 60 years old. In the next 15 years, 50% of America's agriculture equity is going to change hands. Think about that a moment. 50% of the land, buildings, and infrastructure is going to change hands. Who's going to own this land? My dream is that equity is going to be transferred to a new generation of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, entrepreneurial, self-starting young people who want to caress the earth as land lovers, interact with their community as direct marketers, and who want to reintegrate the agrarian farming food economy into our neighborhoods. That's my dream.
That's just a moment from the documentary Farmers for America, and we'll talk more about how Joel Salatin and others are trying to make that vision a reality in a little while. I'm talking with filmmaker Graham Merriweather. And I also want to bring Chuck Wirtz into the conversation. He's a farmer from West Bend, Iowa, and he, along with his son, is featured in the documentary. His family has a large hog operation as well as row crops. Hello, Chuck.
Howdy.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And tell me just a little bit about your family farm, because this is not just your operation. You also farm along with your brothers, right?
That's correct. So my father started farming and moved to our current location in 1960. And I was actually born there and actually have lived there all but 3 years out of my life. And so I got my start in farming through him. And my two brothers, all who also farm with me, he's now gone. And so now it's our objective to try and get the next generation started in farming.
And we do get to meet your son in the film, and he's already working with you on the farm, but he dreams of being a farmer too?
Oh, yeah. I'm in Florida right now, and he's doing chores at home. So he's I actually went through a bout of cancer last year, and so he got thrown into it full-time rather quickly. And my oldest son now has come back to the farm just because of some of the exciting things we're doing on the farm. I never thought I'd see that happen.
Wow. Well, tell me about some of the exciting things you are doing on the farm.
Well, so we're actually entering into organic farming. There's a huge demand and growing demand for organic crops, and that enables us, along with some additional farmers in our community, to take advantage of that and generate some additional revenue per acre. It's a lot more work, but we're not afraid to do the labor and do the management things that are necessary to participate in that system.
How large is your farm?
We're currently at 6,000 acres. 4,000 of that is already certified organic, and another 2,000 acres will be certified organic in 2019.
And what kind of crops are you growing on that land?
Primarily organic corn, both food grade and feed grade. Food grade going into Frito-Lay, chips, General Mills, food-grade corn going into an ever-growing livestock, organic livestock industry, namely chickens, both layers and broilers, and the dairy industry. And then soybeans, food-grade soybeans that go into tofu for Japan, and feed-grade beans that obviously are ground into meal for the organic livestock industry. And then we also do organic oats, wheat. We've done black beans, kidney beans, tried a lot of different other organic products, typically working with marketers of organic products that have a demand, and they come to us as growers. A lot of people in our market, in our geographic area, raised yellow peas last year for protein drinks.
Although it wasn't a very good year for peas.
Not a very good year for peas. Had some issues with aphids in peas, and unfortunately in the organic world, we do not have the tools to fight insects that the rest of the industry does. And so that's some of the risk with organics is that, when you have a challenge, you don't have the use of all of the technology that the commodity world does.
Now, with the changes that have been taking place in your operation, what got you excited about doing a different kind of agriculture, you and your brothers? Why make the changes?
Well, for me, so I grew up as a young man in the 70s when herbicides first started making their presence known. And I enjoyed farming because of the challenges that farming presented. There was a sense of accomplishment when you were successful. To me, technology, specifically GMOs, started to dumb down the industry where anybody could be successful farming if you had enough money, because there was really not that much management left involved in it. And farming got boring for me, which is why we expanded our livestock operation, because I got bored with row crop farming. When we had the opportunity to go back to organic with the challenges that are there, to me it's much more exciting because you can make a difference. You can see the fruits of your labor if you do a good job. It's hard, but at the end of the day, there's just much more contentment in knowing that you accomplished something.
So growing up on the farm, being in agriculture through the 80s and the 90s and seeing all of the changes that we have seen and seeing a lot of, I'm sure, your friends and neighbors leave farming. At this point, to have your oldest son come home to farm with you, to have a younger son looking at a future on the farm, did you think you'd ever live to see that?
Well, you know, there was, so when I graduated in 1978, it was right before the farm crisis, and we were the kind of the last of an era that stayed on the farm. There's an entire generation that's missing from farming because through the farm crisis of the 80s, everybody left farming. You know, kids hear what their parents say around the table, and when the parents talk about how terrible farming is, you know, kids say, why do I want to be part of that? So we've always tried to be positive about farming in our conversations with our kids so that they would hopefully embrace that, and hopefully that would be part of our succession plan, because I can tell you that if you go through a bout of cancer or all of a sudden you have a life-changing event that says, okay, so now what? You come to find out that life doesn't last forever. This land is going to go on to another generation, to someone else. Someone else someday will be farming this ground, and you hope it can be your kids. And so what organic farming has done in our community has just been a huge blessing, in that we've been able to keep a lot of young kids home on the farm because there's opportunity to make a living off of the land.
When you watch this documentary, and also I'm sure you interact with many young farmers who are trying to get into farming, who maybe they want to start a CSA and farm in a different way, often on smaller plots of land. What do you think about that kind of farming?
Well, I tell you, I really wish, unfortunately, I live in rural Iowa, and I really wish I lived closer to a metropolitan area. We did some things. So we partner with some young farmers to help them get started in organic, because most of them don't have the equipment, the storage, the wherewithal. If you're a person who was born, say, after 1985, you probably have never been on a cultivator in your life. And so just to learn some of the basic tasks that needed to be done on a farm. So we usually enter into 5-year arrangements with young farmers to get them started, get their land certified, and then turn them loose after 5 years in hopes that they've gained the knowledge to be able to go and do this on their own. You know, and that's kind of exciting to watch that, to watch those young men, in our particular case, young men. I'm not saying it couldn't be young women, but young men who've got their farm transitioned to organic.
Talking about Western Iowa, I know West Bend, a small town, you've gone through a school consolidation. What do you see as the future for rural Iowa, Chuck?
Well, I think, you know, Joel Salatin talked about people with an entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, that's what we need. I mean, that's what this country was founded on, was people who believed in themselves and could believe that they could do something and they could be different. And that's what we try to, in at least in our home community in rural Iowa, as parents, we try and instill that into our kids. That, you know, I know it's risky, but there's a sense of accomplishment if you can actually build something that's your own. I mean, and that's the thing that to me is always dangerous in agriculture, is it seems like there's a generation that builds an operation and then they give it to their kids. And sometimes, you know, businesses, whether they're farming or anything, don't survive beyond the second or third generation. But I think that it's important that we continue to, you know, I'm turning over at this point, even though I'm 57 and I hopefully have some years, God willing, to participate in this operation, turning it over to my kids and let it be my kids' operation, which is what my dad did, so that we, they get some ownership in it and feel like it can become what they want it to become.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for taking a little time out of your vacation in Florida to talk with us today.
Yeah, it's 82 degrees here, and I hear it's supposed to be snowing in Des Moines. So I just want to put that plug in there, you know.
Thanks a lot.
My wife and I are going for a walk here around the lake.
Good to hear from you, Chuck.
All right. See you, Graham.
Enjoy. Chuck Wirtz, a farmer from West Bend, Iowa, who along with his son is featured in the documentary Farmers for America. With me, filmmaker Graham Merriweather. You're welcome to join the conversation. Unfortunately, our phones are malfunctioning today. So if you'd like to join the conversation, tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Graham, you interview a lot of farmers, you profile a lot of farmers, and you throw into really stark relief some of the huge challenges that young farmers or newer farmers are facing. What are the biggest challenges to these people who want to be a part of agriculture today?
I think the biggest challenge is land and equipment and access to capital. I would put those three at it. And, of course, experience. But I guess that's a challenge that every young person faces. So, we have a situation where one of the stories we show in our film is Garrett Grider, who is a young farmer in Missouri, and he really wants to buy some land, but it's $10,000 an acre, and the land he wants to buy is in Weston, Missouri, and he gets outbid by some lawyers and doctors who are retiring, you know, to a bedroom community of Kansas City. And so it's just so hard for him to get land. And then what another thing that happened, which is very indicative of the challenges young farmers face, is that you had Shuang Wei buy Smithfield, and then the Missouri legislature actually changed the law that used to be that foreign companies couldn't own except a very small amount of land in a given in Missouri, and Smithfield paid off the legislature, changed the law, and then basically they bought up a whole bunch of land, about 40,000 acres, right near where Garrett was looking to buy land. So he's competing with a Chinese multinational. He's competing with retired lawyers and doctors, and you know, here's a young person, 25 years old, wants to start farming and creating food for his community, and he can't do it. So I think that, you know, there's some real challenges that we need to ask ourselves. Who do we want to own our farmland? You know, do we want it to be huge multinationals? Do we want it to be just huge farm owners that own 5-10,000 acres? Or do we want to give young people a shot?
You were talking about how we have these experienced farmers and who, you know, are now many of them reaching retirement age. We have these young farmers who are lacking in experience. They not only have a hard time accessing land, but also, just as Chuck was saying, you know, they've never been on a cultivator. So do you see relationships forming, mentorship relationships forming, crossing a little bit of this gulf between both age and different kinds of farming?
Absolutely. I feel like farmers are some of the most, they're humble. They share ideas. And older farmers are always thrilled to have a young farmer pull up in the driveway and ask them some questions. And I absolutely see those relationships developing. And I feel like what Chuck was talking about, you know, he's bringing some young farmers under his wing, and I feel there's a lot of potential there. If we can set up these bridges between these worlds and get young people onto, it might be a different type of agriculture, commodity production, you know, these old farmers, no matter what type of production they're in, they have incredible experience. They've been feeding us all. You know, so we want to have a lot of gratitude towards them, and we want to be asking a lot of questions because they have a lot of knowledge to impart. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do with this film and hopefully with this generation, is that we're going to ask our elders for advice, and maybe we can even find relationships like what Chuck has developed, where they could, if they have all the land, you know, they might see the virtue in having some sort of really good beneficial agreement for the young farmer. Like the other day, I was just talking to a farmer who had an older farmer. They're not related, but he set up a really wonderful deal for the young farmer to buy land where the young farmer didn't have to put down any 20% deposit and would just pay him over a certain amount of time. And that he did that because he didn't want developers buying up the land. So I think a lot of this is on the old farmer, the older generation to actually step up. And it's also on the young generation to ask and to reach out. So hopefully we can bring these two worlds together and build something beautiful and productive and healthy and regional for our country.
Graham, I'd like you to stay with us. Filmmaker Graham Merriweather, he is the filmmaker behind the new documentary Farmers for America. It's going to be shown in towns and cities all over the state of Iowa for the next couple of weeks. And many of those screenings will also feature conversations that follow the screenings. And I'm going to bring into the conversation here in just a moment a young farmer who farms near Iowa City and is also working hard to help other young farmers find land. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, a conversation inspired by the new documentary Farmers for America. With me, filmmaker Graham Merriweather. The documentary is going to be shown in several different cities in Iowa in the next couple of weeks, in Pleasant Hill, Iowa City, Fairfield, Ames, Des Moines, and also in Cedar Falls. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now as well. You're welcome to join by email, by the way, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kate Edwards is with us. She runs a CSA farm near Iowa City called Wildwoods Farm, now in its eighth year. And she's also part of a project to help young farmers find land called Renewing the Countryside. Hello, Kate.
Hi, Charity. It's great to be here again.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I would love, we've talked about it before, but it's been a while. So I would love for you to share your story again, because finding land, getting a CSA started, is an incredible challenge. What did you have to go through? How did you get started?
So I originally started on non-family land and was there for 5 years and then ended up needing to relocate on a new piece of ground. So I've actually been farming for, this is my eighth year, but have undergone two land access issues. And I will need to go through another one at some point because I don't own the land I'm on. So I'm finding as a young farmer that it's been kind of a fascinating process to go through basically finding the land, knowing how to do it, and learning the work and learning the mentorship is a whole nother area that's also really important. But you also need the land to farm on.
So the first land that you farmed on, tell me about that.
So it was just some land right outside of town, farmed there for a few years, and then found out that I needed to move to another location. And all of a sudden needed to figure out, how does one go about that? So I called both my grandmas and asked if I could farm on their land about an hour from Iowa City. One said yes, one said no. Incidentally, the one that said no thought I couldn't find a husband in rural Iowa, which I don't think would have been true. But anyway, but the reason that I chose to farm where I did is I looked through a number of different options. There were five options that I came up with, and it was a really hard process to identify those options, to figure out what I needed. And all I could think was, I wish I had somebody to coach me through this process. So a couple years later, when the Renewing the Countryside contacted me and said, would you be a coach for beginning farmers going through this process? I was like, yes, I would love to do that. So now I work with Renewing the Countryside and the Land Access Hub in my spare time in the winter, working to help coach farmers through that process.
So tell me more about Renewing the Countryside and the Farmland Access Hub. What is the idea behind this project?
So the idea behind this is, we know these statistics. We know that land is going to change hands, but it's still really hard to enter yourself as a young farmer into that vast, swirling process. And sometimes it helps to have somebody to talk you through it and to walk you through that process. So we're offering free of charge to any young beginning farmer that wants help in Iowa, Minnesota, or Wisconsin. We have different coaches in each state to help walk through that process with people. We can provide technical resources. We have funding from the USDA to be able to provide access to lawyers and access to other technical advisors. But first, what we do is we start with a conversation. So the website that I would tell people to go to is gotfarmland.org, and there's an intake form on that website, and it allows you to share your story and how you might need help, and then we'll contact any farmer in Iowa that wants help, whether it's conventional or alternative ag, that needs help with land access issues. We also offer boot camps. We actually have a boot camp coming up in La Crosse, Wisconsin pretty soon, and there's scholarships available. I think today is the last day to apply for these scholarships, so get on the website if you're interested. And that's just a day-long process to talk about what are the challenges that you need to overcome as a beginning farmer. There's so many different parts to the land access. It's not just about, you know, knocking on your neighbor's door saying, can I buy the land or can I lease it? There's a whole host of issues such as technical readiness, financial readiness, personal readiness, all sorts of issues that we help farmers talk through and then help them identify the areas that they need to work on, and then we help coach them through that, whether it's helping them find a mentor or different things. I'm meeting with a number of farmers right now, and one of the farmers I met with last night said, it's just so helpful to have someone guide me through, help me know what's important and what's not, because everybody tells you to Google it nowadays, and really, you need someone to help walk you through the process.
Well, and you mentioned financial readiness, and it's not just access to land, but the startup costs for trying to start your own farm are enormous with the land, with equipment. And then how long is it going to be before you actually have a reliable income? I mean, that must be an incredibly scary process to go through, Kate.
Yeah, it is. Interestingly enough, when I first started vegetable farming, I didn't want to grow vegetables. I wanted to be a row crop farmer like my grandparents were. But I realized that vegetables for me at the time was the way to get into farming because it didn't cost a lot to get in. And now I love vegetables love to do the CSA.
That approach to farming was attractive because you didn't need as much land? Is that?
You don't need as much land and you don't need as much money. So I got started with $5,000 and an acre of rented ground. I had 11 customers my first year. Now we have over 200 families that buy from our CSA. And so we're bigger now. But I've been able to match my capital needs as the farm has grown. The Farm Service Agency has been a huge help, which is the federal government's arm for lending to farmers. And there's been other things along the way that have helped. But it's really exciting to talk about this kind of energizing young farmer movement. I've been really, really pleased to talk to Graham, and I and a group of other young farmers are part of this group that's bringing the film to Iowa City. And we're bringing it through the National Young Farmers Coalition, which is kind of a national organization. And we're bringing we're actually starting an Eastern Iowa chapter for the National Young Farmers Coalition. So we're really hoping that those in the Iowa City area could come out on February 16th to Old Brick. And the event starts at 6 o'clock, but at 5 o'clock there's an opportunity for any young farmer in Iowa that wants to connect with other young farmers and come to our young farmer meeting.
Well, and Graham, in the film, you look at some of these organizations that have developed to help young farmers around the country. I mean, there is a tremendous movement here, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, there's just so much palpable excitement and youth and innovation and just new approaches to new challenges. So it's absolutely exciting. And you go to some during the winter, there's all these conferences that are happening where people are sharing ideas and learning about new ways to do things and comparing notes. And it's just very exciting. And I should mention that we're also working a lot with FFA. So we're doing screenings with FFA chapters throughout the country. And obviously, FFA is just an incredible organization that helps young people get started in agriculture and learn about farming. So it's just wonderful to see organizations like the National Young Farmers Coalition and FFA and Renewing the Countryside that Kate mentioned. I feel like there's just right now there's this momentum and there's so much excitement. And I feel that something really positive is happening in our nation's agriculture.
There was a farm that you profiled in the film, Polyface Farms, where the concept behind this farm is that young people who want to get into farming and put together a business plan can be a part of this farm within this larger farm, but actually start drawing a salary at the start instead of all of that incredible financial uncertainty. Is that the only farm that you know of that is using that kind of new model for getting young farmers involved?
You know, I believe it's the only farm I know of that's using that exact model. I definitely know that there are other farms that are seeing this problem and trying to figure something out. It's so exciting because I spent a lot of time filming with commodity chicken farmers and hearing about these contracts. And, you know, it's just something where it feels like they don't really have any control. And in this new model that Polyface Farms is developing, like you said, I mean, these young people are able, they don't have to put any money up front for equipment, any money up front for land. And Polyface has already established a market. So it really gives these young people the agency of running their own farm within the mother umbrella of a really successful enterprise. So I think it would be really interesting to see other farms across the country take that type of a model. And if you've got a pretty stable, large regional market, use that as an incubator to get other young people the opportunity and the agency to run their own production.
Kate, you have been working with other young farmers for a long time, since you started, you've been mentoring other young farmers who want to get into this. And sometimes when I talk to young people who are like, oh, I really want to run my own CSA, there is this sort of idyllic vision that they have of what it's like to be a CSA farmer. And Graham, in your film, you shared many, many quotes from farmers talking about how much they enjoy the life and how great it is to get up and do something that you really care about. Kate, do you think that there's a reality check that a lot of young people who are interested in farming need to go through? Because, I mean, this is incredibly hard work.
Yeah, I mean, farmers don't make a lot of money. No matter what size you are, farmers don't make a lot of money. It's a lot of work. It has to be a passion. And I think there are a lot of people that it's a passion for. But there's still that piece that you have to get over the learning curve. And that's where mentorship comes in. I would not be where I am without my mentor, Susan Utes. And she's mentored other people as well. So there's, you know, and organizations like Practical Farmers of Iowa and things like that. So that's why I think there's so many people out there that are championing farmers. But the reality is just 140 years ago, there was 50% of the population that farmed, and now we're at less than 1%. So there's a lot of people out there that want to help make sure that farming happens. And one of the things that I wanted to note is this local event we're doing. We have sponsors from a number of different organizations, but one of the most poignant sponsorships that I found was that we have the Johnson County Farm Bureau sponsoring it and the Iowa Organics Association sponsoring it. This is an issue that crosses organizational lines. Land access matters to the conventional farmer that's trying to grow their operation, as well as to the vegetable operation that lost a lease. This is an issue that matters to all farmers.
And we have this question from Matt Russell at Drake, and they're hosting another showing of the film on February 22nd. And Matt wants to know from you, Graham, what's the most interesting or surprising thing you've heard from the panel discussions that are following the film? Because you're hoping to start bigger conversations with all of these showings.
That's a great question. We are very much one of my big philosophies in distributing film is that I like to bring the film directly to the people and the parts of the country that it's the most relevant. So this is pretty much like we did a wonderful premiere of the film in Indianapolis during the National FFA convention. I've only personally been a part of two or three conversations. So at this point, I really see what's going on in Iowa over the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to Wisconsin and Minnesota, and we'll be in Missouri and Nebraska a little bit as well. But I'm kind of seeing this trip and this experience as the proving grounds for the film. We haven't yet sort of, this is kind of its first real run. And so I'm really excited to have these conversations. And I, just hearing Kate talk and that type of synergy that, you know, she's mentioning where different organizations that may not normally get together are getting together, that's our dream. Like, because I think you have the wisdom, you have the experience, you have the efficiency of large-scale agriculture, and then you have the youth and the innovation and the drive and the idealism, which is wonderful, too, of the local food movement. I think if we can get those two things in the room and put the, you know, just let's think about creating our best agriculture together. That's what this is all about.
And Kate, you mentioned that this is the first meeting of the Eastern Iowa chapter of the Young Farmers Coalition. And so this is a new movement in Iowa, although, as I mentioned, I mean, you've been networking. You've been working with other young farmers for a long time. How do you see things changing and evolving? There's been a lot of excitement about the local food movement for quite a while. But what is this moment like? What's happening now?
Well, I really think that this is an opportunity for farmers to stay the course, farmers in the local food movement to continue with the models that have been working and continue educating the consumer about why we do what we do. But I also see it as an opportunity to reach across to those larger farmers and to learn from them. You know, I still have the dream of being a row crop farmer someday, and I hope to diversify my farm. And I think that a lot of farmers have those interests. And I think the interesting thing is that the local food movement is not new. It's been around for a while, but it's also not going
yeah.
away. And I think that it's important to realize that we as young farmers can learn from farmers from our past, as well as be part of that moving it forward. So I think what I see this as, it's kind of exciting. I mean, farmers, especially this time of year, we're really busy. My friends who are on this panel, one's lambing right now, another's calving. So there's a lot going on, and we're saying that this is important to us to bring this together. Doing the, you know, the farmers are the ones organizing, calling the vendors, making sure we have the event center here in Iowa City, and we're doing that because we want to bring people together over the issue of farming. And this isn't just for farmers. We all eat. And so our hope is that everyone who eats and who wants to watch a good film and get free popcorn. By the way, my farmer friend Wade Dooley is growing the popcorn for the Iowa film, for our Iowa City film showing. So we're even going to have Iowa popcorn.
So
awesome.
You know, we've talked about young farmers wanting to get in and the challenges that they face. But of course, beyond startup challenges, there's also the making a living and mm-hmm. making sure that the food gets to where it needs to be sold in Iowa. And we just have a little, like a minute left. Kate, where do you think the most growth needs to happen right now? We've talked about food hubs on this program and other distribution systems. What's lacking? Where do you think the growth needs to focus?
Direct-to-consumer. I personally believe that in the direct-to-consumer market, we should focus less on the intermediary, and we should focus more on finding your farmer directly and finding models that work for the farmer. In the local food movement, I'm biased towards the CSA model because it gives farmer equity and farmer parity, and I think that that's really important to give the farmer a living, and it's a proven model that's worked.
Well, Kate Edwards, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity. This has been great.
Kate Edwards runs a CSA farm near Iowa City called Wildwoods Farms, now in its eighth year. She'll be part of the film showing in Iowa City. And Graham Merriweather, thank you.
Thank you, Charity. Great.
Graham Merriweather, the filmmaker behind the new film, Farmers for America. It will be shown in Pleasant Hill, Iowa, by the Southeast Polk FFA on February 15th, in Iowa City at Old Brick on February 16th, at the Fairfield Public Library in Fairfield on February 17th, Iowa State University in Ames on February 20th, Drake University in Des Moines on February 21st, and also the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls on February 21st. You can find out more at leaveitbetter.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.